On this episode of Pottages.
Oh no, we're using another brand.
I'm Black War Kazuman! Ah!
Digivolve me now!
But if you make me digivolve, I'll do it! I'll do anything your summon wants!
Ryo Akiyama?
Yeah.
P.S. The Gilmon bread still needs a little work. P.P.S. The Lucky Charm carries all my love with it. We miss you, son.
Thank you, Mom.
You're gonna need a password.
You can use mine to get on the internet.
Pottages.
Welcome to Pottages, episode 307, Rika's series of unfortunate events.
Digital World Part 1.
Leveling up your bonds, a whole new digi world, and cruising on confidence.
Recorded April 30th, 2016.
Pottages is your critically nostalgic analytical tour through the Digimon anime. I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by Ashley McDonald.
I'm gonna one-punch Kazu in the face.
Okay. Asher Softman.
And I think the worst part of Ryo is that he's boring.
And Andrew Softman.
It's time to duel.
No, it isn't.
It's actually not time to do that.
It's always time.
It's time for recaps. This week, we're looking at episodes 25 through 29.
In episode 25, Brave New Digital World, a.k.a. Brave New Digimon Adventure, the kids float in Digilimbo until Jerry points out that the enemy's gate is down. Calamon gets trapped in a metaphor stuck between two worlds, but then Kitty prides his way out. The kids mourn the loss of a new friend. Guillemon mourns the loss of an old friend, Bread.
In episode 26, Kazu and Kenta's excellent adventure, a.k.a. Kazu and Kenta's excellent adventure, Rika chaperones Kazu and Kenta as they go on a lover's retreat.
In episode 27, Motorcycle Madness, aka Reduce, Reuse, Remotorcycle, Takato, Henry, and Jerry try to help a town fight off a bomb troop possessed by a motorcycle. Impmon finally gets what he always wanted, to fall into a pit of lava.
In episode 28, Blame It on Ryo, aka Even a Mansplaining Clock is Right Twice a Day, Rika babysits Kazu and Kenta in Clock Town, but gets flustered when the cool boy from the universe next door drops by. Takato, Henry, and Jerry investigate cubism.
In episode 29, Goliath, aka Through the Desert on a Dragon with No Name, all the kids, minus Rika, meet up and sleep in Devimon's Mansion 2.0. Calamon runs into Impmon, but doesn't recognize him since he's been going to the lava gym lately. To fight the dragon Deva no one remembers, Ryo doubles Cyberdramon's size in Photoshop, but then runs away to avoid paying for a Creative Cloud to trick him.
So now our general impressions.
The second they got to the digital world, everything got like 300 times gayer. Am I the only one who noticed this? Please tell me.
Jeff noticed this.
I only noticed it with Kazu and Kenta. Who else?
Oh, no. Rika and Jerry.
And I took that as good friendship.
Yeah.
I was like, I dig this friendship.
Sure. But like at the same time, you could also take it as everyone's hooking up now.
Well, I mean, but like then she goes off with Kazu and Kenta and that is just like, that really kills it.
Well, that I think that was good friendship on Rika's part.
I have many feelings about this.
I mean, it was good friendship on Rika's part, and it totally did not pay off for her.
I was pretty into the first three episodes of this, and then Ryo came, and I was like, I hate everything. I would have thought I might actually cry in the first
one. Right.
The first one with Ryo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Henry and Takato had a moment, too.
Henry was in this arc.
Henry was in this arc.
Henry I was know. In this arc.
Hard to believe.
Hey, I noticed the things he did. Good on you, Henry.
He did a couple things, but yeah. The numbers worked out really well until Ryo came, actually. Ryo just shouldn't be here. Yeah. It's messing everything up.
He should get
yeah,
out.
Yeah, just like everything else he's ever done.
I know.
Gosh, he's the worst.
And he's boring.
Fun fact, that CD I found has Ryo's image song on it. Ash
Why?
Used to be obsessed with him.
Yeah. okay, I did used to like him, and now I have no idea why.
I feel like I used to like him. Like, I'm pretty sure my child self thought he was really cool, and I hate you, child self. Why would you ever think that?
right.
He's a terrible person.
He's so boring.
Okay, so I think we can all confidently say we have a consensus on favorite character. Everyone says Ryo.
Totally.
Yes.
This is the first time consensus across the board. Everyone voting for Ryo.
That's not even consensus. That's
just a fact.
No, that's not consensus. It's unanimous. It's a unanimous vote. Consensus is when you have a majority and the people who disagree also at least understand and are okay with letting it pass.
Really?
That's true. Yeah.
Yes.
Huh. I guess I've always misunderstood that.
So stop using it wrong.
So who are actual favorites? Ashley, start with you.
Okay. Rika, because she displayed so much goodness and she got such crap for it, and I'm so mad. Like, Rika, I appreciate you. I want to give you a hug if you wanted a hug.
God. I pretty much agree.
Pretty much. So is Rika your answer, Asher?
Yeah. I feel like I had a favorite at one point and I can't remember what it was. It was like a Digimon of the day, so I don't remember what it was.
In the beginning, it was going to be Renamon, because I actually really liked Renamon's interactions with Kazu and Kenta.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to go with Rika now.
Rika deserves a lot of things. Yes. after this arc.
Yes.
And Andrew?
I don't know.
I also struggled to think of an answer.
No, it's just this arc is like the part where I always fall off.
Hmm.
I can see why.
No, it's just the whole digital world is just something that exists, maybe, but I'm not sure.
Well, on that note, my favorite character. So this is what I wrote down, and and it's not going to count for the fantasy draft, because I think it's a answer that no one could have predicted. Like, it's outside of the class of things we normally consider characters, so it's not really fair. But
is it the motorcycle?
No, it's not the motorcycle. Actually, that is a character.
Oh, that's what I was going to pick. I was going to pick the motorcycle.
Oh, you should pick the motorcycle.
I'm not picking the motorcycle, because I do like Rika more than I like the motorcycle.
So my answer was the digital world, but oh. I'm a little hesitant. I'm mostly I didn't have any one thing that stood out. So it's and I also kind of really don't like the cliche of the world itself is a character.
Well, it is, though.
It is. I mean, if you make it a character, it's kind of a jerk.
the thing is, it's a character in a large number of ways in which we discuss characters and how they interact with other characters, but also not in a lot of other ways. It doesn't have a person. It doesn't have if a setting. I can't really express my thoughts.
I see what you're saying. It has a personality, but it does not have personality in which it is a person.
Yeah.
Sure.
Characters, yeah. It affects characters, but it itself does not grow in any way based on the actions of the characters.
Right. It's just I was going to say it's just a setting, but that's too literal.
That's literally what it is.
Yes.
Yes. You can't define the word by using the word.
It's only character trait. Really, is that it's dying somehow, and we don't know why.
Is it?
Yeah. Lots of things are degrading and so forth.
I'm a little hesitant about that because, I don't know. They did imply that with a line in the dub that is apparently...
No, there are a lot of instances where you can tell that it's falling apart. There's some points where, things are see-through, and that's because the data's... That's because
notice.
The data's not stable.
I didn't notice.
Yeah, I don't think we're supposed to know that yet. Thanks, Andrew.
What? No.
Or the one thing that Renamon says is this place has changed since I've been here. But that's also pretty inconsistent because it doesn't seem like she's actually been there before. So
yeah,
exactly. What? Oh my gosh.
Okay. So there's so a reason behind that. The most obvious candidate is that the Japanese line is saying this place is weird, and the word for is weird and is changing are the same. So it's possible that was a mistranslation. It's also possible just just miscommunication.
Yeah, it's just I don't think this world is particularly stable.
I agree, but I was not under the impression it was deteriorating.
I don't know. I felt like it was because most of the digital world we see is a desert.
Yes, and okay, but we've only seen a small part of it.
But that's like, that's all I remember about this digital
world. Okay, we're going to talk more about the digital world. We have a whole section for it. So, in terms of actual characters, because I'm still conflicted about calling digital world a character, actual favorite character is Takato's mom. Just because, like, that one brief scene stood out above most of everything else in this arc. So Andrew, do you have a favorite yet?
I mean, I don't know. It's just Rika and Ranma.
Was it Ryo and you're ashamed that we hated on him?
No, he is boring.
Thank you.
Wait, pick between Rika and Ranma.
Ranma.
Whoa.
I'm okay with that.
Andrew plays a dangerous game.
So any particular hates aside from Ryo?
Kazu and Kenta.
Yep. I wrote down Kazu, Kenta, Ryo.
Yeah, I can't tell if I hate Kazu more than Ryo. Like, it's pretty close. Kenta is just, like, getting dragged along.
I realized I don't really, like, when I think about, like, individually, Kazu or Kenta on their own, I don't really hate them too much. But, like, together, they are just...
No, yeah. They have the group problem of, like... Oh, like most dudes that I played hockey with, perfectly fine as individual people. Throw them together in a room and they're just a bunch of terrible, terrible human beings. That is Kazu.
Yep. I wanted to take this point in time because we have, in every episode we've done for this arc, somebody wanted to be something they were not. Or they wanted something that they didn't have. So we have Kazu and Kenta wanting to be tamers. We have we have the Devas wanting to digivolve. We have, who was it? Somebody else wanted to digivolve.
Impmon.
Oh, the clock.
Impmon?
No, the clock dudes. Yeah, there was Impmon and he got what he wanted. And I have thoughts on that. I have thoughts.
I don't think it was Clockmon. I think it was Sakurumon.
Yeah, I meant one of the clock ones. I don't remember which one is which. And I don't
remember. I'm sorry, but the other one was literally Clockmon.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think, like, the desire to digivolve is just presented as, like, this thing that everyone wants around the digital world, which doesn't seem, I don't know, that seems
It seems weird.
It does seem weird.
I guess it's, like, that's just the culture of survival of the fittest.
It's just... very odd. Like, did anyone else feel like it was weird how every single Digimon, like, really wants to digivolve?
No, but isn't there a line where it's like digivolving has, like, disappeared for some reason? Wasn't that a line?
The dog David does say something, which I'll get to later, but it doesn't really make sense. And I'll get to it when I'll be like, this doesn't make sense. But anyway, I think it's, like, weird, but in a sense that, like, the Digimon that we've known have been the ones that are more, I guess, like, personable. And so, like, we kind of agree with them not really needing to digivolve. But the ones that we meet here are more like they have to digivolve to survive is kind of the implicit feeling I get.
But it doesn't even... Yeah. But it doesn't even totally feel that way, because when they started talking about digivolution, it was because Renamon had digivolved to Cubimon, and their immediate reaction was like, whoa, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's not presented in a way that's like, we are struggling to survive, like, if only we could digivolve, we could survive. It's just like, oh, that's cool, I wish I could do that, that's quick.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's more like an ideal of coolness than it is...
I mean, it still ties into survival, I think, in an indirect way. Because, I mean, the whole idea behind sexual selection is that, oh, if you're really healthy, you'll look really pretty, and the peacocks will... that's how peacocks got so gorgeous. But we've already had the discussion of how strength is beauty when tied to Renamon in particular, which is sort of awkward that we only have it tied to, you know, the female Digimon that we have right now. But also, we have it a bit with Leomon.
Yeah, he's a hottie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's strength and attraction, sometimes in really uncomfortable ways. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
But that longing... The Digimon long... I feel there's a difference in what the Digimon long for and what the Tamers long for.
I feel like actually what kind of bothers me, like the thing that I haven't been able to put my finger on until just now, is that it almost is like the show is representing them as being too similar for my taste. Like the thing that the viewer, maybe not the Tamers in the show, but like the viewers are like, oh yeah, digivolving is cool. Like that's what I want. I want, like, if I had a Digimon, I want them to digivolve. And it's like they just take those desires and put them on the Digimon too. Like even though they're like totally different cultures, totally different, you know, survival of the fittest mentality and stuff, but it's just like, oh yeah, that'd be cool, like I'm watching a TV show. I don't know.
Right. Like, we don't have a really good articulation about why the kids want to be tamers. It's clear that the Digimon, if you get a tamer, you get massive benefits.
And power. And
that would be a benefit.
Tamers with benefits.
Right? But the kids, they don't know what they're getting until they've got it. They get companionship. They grow as well, but that's not what they're after. I was wondering if Ashley had thoughts on Rika.
Rena.
That would be that's an interesting cool name, AU, actually. Right? That is a cool name. I know people named Rena.
All right. Like what Rika wants.
Yeah, because she wanted power, right? Originally. But
she wanted to be the very best.
Like no one ever was.
And this...
Like Rio was before her, actually.
Oh, God.
I mean, in some ways, it's just like, I feel like Rika at the end just wanted, like, respect. But I feel like it fluctuated between, like, I need, like, an immediate need to find Takato and people. then like finding Kalamon to like I feel like Rika is the most focused right now but like also
yes.
getting the most crap.
Yes, agreed.
I think she's the most focused except for the like I feel like it's awkward writing mistakes that like in I think the second and third episode she keeps talking about wanting to get back to the real world, which is like not she's clearly trying to like get back to where they landed so they can find Kalamon and meet up with the kids again, but instead she's like we need to fly up so we can get to the real world, and it's like no, you're not trying to get home right now, like this is
oh yeah, that was confusing.
Yeah, I just chalk it up to like writers, you're confused, sorry
dub writers.
Yeah.
I mean, the most awkward thing for me with Rika in this was in the fight with the ultimate level Digimon. She was like, yeah, Renamon, like, go attack it. I'm like, Rika, why would you do that? Like, why would you not try to...
Wait, which episode?
In episode, the first one with Rio.
So, Megadramon? No.
Yeah, whatever, Gigadramon.
No, Gigadramon's the blue one.
Whatever, one of them.
It's confusing.
Colors are artificial constructs.
Like she, you know, does the Digivice thing and scans it and is like, oh no, it's an ultimate level. But then like her and Renamon are like, yeah, well, we I don't know, like we got this. I'm like, no, you don't. Like what?
I mean, I actually, that's an open question I have about what kind of Digivolution is possible now that they don't have Kalamon in close proximity, because they don't seem to have any problems swiping cards and going to champion, but then they never go to ultimate in these episodes. So.
I mean, yeah, that's confusing.
One of the implications is that they just can't, that like the card, the champion Digivolution card, you know, like doesn't require Kalamon, but ultimate Digivolution does, and so like Rika is kind of like, well, this is my only option, but like it's just like these are things that you can say in the script,
but she should have just Digivolved immediately.
Oh yeah, instead of fighting as Renamon, right, yeah.
Yeah, like...
yeah, the whole thing was just frustrating. Like a couple line, they can't fix the, like, Renamon, why she would fight as Renamon. I think they just thought that was cool to, like, have this little figure fighting this giant thing. But, like, just, like, one line could fix the Cubemon thing. Like, we can't go to Ultimate, so, like, Cubemon, your only hope or something. Like, that's all you need to make it make sense. But no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, it's very unclear exactly what Rika wants, but she seems much more focused on the actual tasks at hand.
Right.
But then I would definitely say, like, respect is the end point of it.
Yeah. And Renamon's always given her that. But I think Rika couldn't accept it from Renamon until, you know, she realized that Renamon was actually kind of a person and not just someone who fights, like, something that fights for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... I think what I'm sort of getting at with this topic is that I've talked a lot in previous seasons about how bonds and growing into yourself have been sort of the cornerstone of what makes Digivolution happen. And in Tamers, I think even more so, it happens to be interpersonal bonds. And we're finally starting to see how that comes together and how what Digimon wants, which is power, apparently. Everyone's so uptight, like, so convinced all Digimon like to fight. I still am completely unconvinced of this.
Rio, I'm looking at you.
Freaking Rio. Yeah. I'm not totally sure. Oh, actually, well, let's talk about Rio for a minute.
Okay.
What?
Let's talk about why?
What? All right, we know that power comes from, like, your bond with your Digimon. We see it with Takato. We see it with Rika. We see it.
Okay. So with Henry. I should push back on that. Like, what if the intent is instead to show that, like, there are many different kinds of power and there's not just one kind of relationship?
Yes, I agree. And I think that Ryo is actually doing a couple things here in that, yes, there is power in sort of, I guess, domination. There's power in controlling something. There's power in literal restraint.
In whipping your Digimon.
Yeah, like, ugh.
I mean, I don't think his power comes from restraining him or like comes from dominating him. I think his power comes from the Cyberdemon being just having so much raw strength that there is some control required. If that makes any sense. That like instead of having a healthy balance, it's just like going all out and then needing to be like reined in kind of philosophy.
Of course. At the same time, I completely disagree with that method of doing it.
Right.
And the fact that Ryo, I don't think, is ever called out on this bugs me.
Why can't Cyberdemon talk? I was very confused.
Yes. These episodes treated Cyberdemon as not a complete person.
Okay, the frustrating part is that there is like a backstory to Cyberdemon that makes some sense of this, but it conflicts with it just doesn't really fit with the dub dialogue or what I know, what I've heard, the original Japanese dialogue either. So, in short, he's supposed to be Cyberdemon is like a fusion of a Digimon, of Monogemon that Ryo had a healthy partnership relationship with.
Right.
Who fused with like the ultimate villain of the WonderSwan games. And so like, I feel like Ryo Defenders will be like, oh no, like this is his, dealing with Cyberdemon is like his burden. It's not like he chose to oppress him or anything, but like.
But Jeff, they did not have to write the story like that in the first place. They did not have to put that power thing in place. They did not have to imply that in any situation, a person does not get to be a person.
Mm, yeah. And even without that, even just like what the show, without knowing the backstory, like the show does not present it in any kind of healthy way. It just seems like
right. He
has an uncontrollable Digimon. It's not like, and he says, oh, well, actually, he is my friend in there who's been possessed by something else. And it's like, this is why I need to help him snap out of it. Like, nothing like that. It's just like, he is just an uncontrollable thing. And
right.
And that's just not.
I just feel like backstory doesn't explain to me why he can't talk. Like,
I also don't think, I don't think it's consistent that he doesn't talk. Like, I don't remember his lines, but I was reading something that mentioned that he like taunts in the dub, which I don't quite remember, but I wasn't positive that he doesn't. Maybe it's later too.
But I mean, he still doesn't talk much, and that's, you know, as talking creatures, that's how we gauge sentience. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I want to say about Ryo real quick, which is not totally on topic, but he is Takato gone to the extreme. He, remember when Gilmon was really hard to control, after his evolutions and stuff? I think this is Ryo's actually decent purpose in this show, in that showing that Takato's method is a lot better, period.
Mm.
And this would be the alternative. And it's uncomfortable and nobody likes it.
I think they're conflicted about. I mean, once he, like, the fight with, I can't remember the day, the Dragon David Majiramon, I think. Like, after that fight, the only one who's uncomfortable is Jerry. Everyone else is like, cool, he, like, used this Goliath card and made Cyberdemon all big, like, that's so awesome. And Jerry's on him, he's like,
I mean, that was part of the exchange that I didn't like. Like, she was like, awful. And then Kazu's like, awesome. And I'm like, I hate everything in this show.
Right?
I can't specifically remember Takato's response, but like, I really like the reading of it being like, Takato's, like, this is the end point if he continued down the road of not really forming, of like, just caring about power and strength and not forming a really strong friendship bond.
He's a foil. I think he's a foil for both Takato and Rika. And I don't really appreciate how they use him with Rika. Any other thoughts on this?
I mean, I thought it was interesting, sort of related to Bond, more like seeing how the kids react to being thrown into a different setting where it's just them and there's no parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the biggest change happened in Henry. Like, it felt consistent with his character, but it came out as more dramatic than the other kids. Like, Tayerman and his relationship felt more like it went to an extreme. And so his his bond with Tayerman felt more abrasive. Like Tayerman kept being like, let's just go beat up the motorcycle. And Henry was like, no, like strong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree.
And he pulled his like, we shouldn't meddle with this town that's existed forever. Just like leave them alone. Like stop your imperialism crap. And everybody else is just like, nah, let's go take down the motorcycle.
Yeah. All right. Anything else about the kids? Because there's one more person or one more Digimon we have to address.
Who's the Digimon?
Okay. Impmon. He got what he wanted on his own, sort of. And we're going to see how that works. We're going to see how it works for him. The idea that he got that strength by himself without any other outside influences to help, like, balance it, I think is going to be important.
But it really, he gets the strength completely because of outside influences.
Yeah, but he doesn't, it's strength he only wields by himself. He doesn't have a tamer to,
sure.
That's what I meant. Like, yes, he got it from the dog.
But it's also like a conditional, it's like, you have a mission. It's like, to some degree, that is a kind of relationship. It's like a master-servant kind of thing.
That's true.
In a very abstract sense.
Yeah. Hmm. It is a different relationship, and I want to track it, is all I want to say about that. We haven't seen him in action yet, so.
Yeah. I don't understand why he, like, ignored Calamon, but all right, sure, yeah.
No, I can understand it.
Oh, I think that's because, like, Calamon represents this other form of gaining strength, and Beazamon's like, no, I'm above that.
Because he's like, it's like meeting someone at your high school reunion. You're like, I used to be the unpopular kid, but now I'm so much cooler. So the first commercial we're going to watch is for episodes 26 and 27. Which, what is that? That's the Babamon Gigimon episode and the motorcycle episode.
We're starting a new season of Digimon with two brand new episodes.
All right!
First, when the gang gets scattered across the digital world.
What if we can't ever get back?
They turn an ordinary road trip into one excellent adventure.
Amateurs.
Then the Tamers find out that their biggest threat comes from their best buddy.
Gilmon!
When Gilmon becomes possessed, can the Tamers save his soul without losing theirs?
No!
I don't know if they can save his soul.
It was so overly dramatic. Like, oh my god. Like, I feel like looking back at these commercials, I'm like, they made it seem so much, not better, but just like so much more dramatic and like impactful than it actually was. You know, like, there wasn't some like huge moral dilemma about Gilmon being on the bike. It was just like, yeah, Liamon was like, yeah, I just hit him and then he fell off. Okay, cool.
It's okay, Takato. He has a very hard head. I mean, they have to do that. You can't market things as like, yeah, this is mediocre. Like,
it's just a chill episode today. Yeah, they're just kind of hanging out.
They're just hanging out.
So we are introduced to the digital world in this episode, these episodes, and it's a thing.
It sucks.
Okay, that is not my direction, but I just want to talk about the mechanics and general setting of the digital world. And this is also, I mean, this was a topic I was going into, like I planned to talk about anyway, but we also got some suggestions from Patreon to talk about it as well, from Eric Angemon and Sam Kuragamon. But I think we're going to just naturally, with what I want to talk about, get to a lot of the points they brought up. So this isn't a formal Patreon topic, but it kind of is. So the first thing I want to talk about was the bridge between the digital world and the real world and how it contrasts with basically the way they get to the digital world and how it's different from the first season in particular. And it's like they go through like a weird digital space with like characters floating in the background, like not like human characters.
It's not that different though.
It's pretty different than like flying through water, you know, like.
Yeah, but after the water, you do see something similar.
I suppose. And I guess the effect of them going through the digital portals in season two, whatever, the digital gates is digital looking. But in general, my impression is that this is much, just feels much more digital from the onset. I mean, that's, I think, a recurring theme in the discussion of the digital world. The next thing I really liked about the digital world is how the real world is visible in the sky. And first of all, I thought Ashley might remind you of Escaflowne, just because.
That's true.
Because, like, the dynamic of a, like, hidden secret world where from that world you can see our world, but not vice versa, reminds me of that a lot.
Yeah, and beams.
I hate those beams.
Oh, other beams, Escaflowne? I don't remember.
I mean, there's beams of light that take them around Gaia.
Oh, really? I don't remember that.
And that's how they get back to the... Yeah, that's how they get to the Earth, too.
So, yeah, one of the things I really like about this, like, having it up in the sky is just that it's a kind of like a constant reminder of how far away they are from home. And it's... I think I first I read this, I thought of this connection after reading System Restore review of one of the episodes that mentioned how it's like similar in theory to when in the Dark Master arc they have the real world in the sky, but that there it's kind of a reminder of the stakes of what they're fighting for, and it's like, you know, to bring them closer to the real world in a way. And here it's like kind of the opposite. It's like it's there as a reminder how far away they are from home, and that's really cool. And it's also neat as a visual yardstick for like how deep they are in the digital world. And that's kind of cool.
I don't know that kind of gets confusing after a while.
So my way of parsing that is that I guess you could read it as being confusing if you think of the digital world as being a, you know, geographic globe that has like a logical spatial relationship, and you're like, but how does it make sense, like where they are? I view it instead as it's not, it's abstract. It's each layer of the digital world is basically a like instanced level in a video game where like you get to the next level and it's like its own little world geometrically. So everyone is kind of like the only yards you have between them is how far away the real world looks. But I also like how I like how seeing the Digimon seeing the real world constantly kind of reflects how the Digimon we've all seen have all been so obsessed with the real world, and not like it's not the same in reverse. Not like the real world, they barely know the digital world, and it makes sense seeing that, like how, you know, in the digital world the real world is looming over them all the time.
I feel like they would have come up with a better term for it than the real world, but
that's true. Yeah, like from the perspective of like living in the digital world your whole life, being like, yeah, there's the real world. Like, no, like,
yeah. That doesn't make sense.
That shows a limited perspective of writers.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to justify that to myself as like, this is the physical world. That's what they mean by real, but...
The not digital world.
Yeah, maybe I should try and use, because I really don't like real in most contexts. I should say, try and use physical.
Yeah.
Physical and digital. Other oddities of the digital world. I really like how there are, it's retained, like the way the season one digital world was odd was kind of in like, it was basically like, looked like the real world, the physical world, whatever, but just like had like some wacky stuff in it, like vending machines and phone booths and things were just like, this is illogical for you to put it here. Like, it was almost like it was designed by someone who was like, let's copy pasting random things.
I mean, it looked like a more primitive, like a previous physical world, but with random weird technology things thrown in that you're like, that wouldn't.
And upside down pyramids.
That wouldn't be on a beach. Like,
right. Whereas this digital world, it's much more focused on like data and like digitalness, and the oddities of this digital world are more kind of focused around that. Some of the things I like the tumbleweed of data are kind of neat. They look cool, and the data streams. I really like the data streams.
The data streams are annoying though.
In what way?
Because it just feels like something that just forces the plot to move in other ways.
Sure.
Like, it's just an obstacle for the sake of obstacles.
I don't know about that. I mean, one of the things that Digimon constantly in the past seasons has like struggled with, I feel, is wanting to split up the characters to have them bounce off each other, but not really having good reasons for it a lot of the time, or like trying to find reasons for it. I think I'm particularly thinking of like 02, where they'd be like, let's go on a mission and let's just like randomly split up because like, yeah, we need to talk separately.
I mean, I'm trying to think of if the digital world is actually the internet or something. I'm trying to decide whether I like this.
I think it's just a computer server.
But I'm trying to figure out if like its physical depiction makes any sense from that perspective. And I think it could if it had any logic behind it, which it doesn't. So
I don't think it's like literal. There are some loose metaphors that make some that like resonate somewhat with digital terminology, but aside from that. Anyway, the data streams, I really like how they are they're there all the time in the background, kind of looming over them, threatening them. They seem really dangerous because they are like just getting separated is danger. It's not like it's going to physically hurt you or anything. It's just like, this is just going to be a pain to find each other, and being separated is danger in itself, but like they themselves are not dangerous. I think is really neat. And I think it's a much more compelling conceit of forcing people to get split up than most of the things we've seen. And it is kind of frustrating and random when like it does happen to them, but like I like the the constant threat that they're under, that like if there's one off in the distance and it's like coming towards them, like the odds of a beam hitting you right exactly where you are is kind of low, but like if it does, there's such huge consequences that like it's still a really big threat. And what I kind of like is that I feel like every time that the beam has come near them in these episodes, it's come near them and gotten them. You know, it hasn't just been, there hasn't been any like nearby encounters that they've missed. And I really like night mode of the digital world. Like it's a neat, you know, it's like a little detail really. It doesn't, I guess it's actually easier to animate than like showing dusk and dawn and everything. And so you just have like two modes of the digital world, but it's also the kind of thing that like,
well, they don't have a sun.
That's true too. Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
What doesn't make sense?
Why would they have a night mode?
Because why not? Like if you're thinking of it as like it's inside a computer, it's not inside a computer. It's not just supposed to be a internals of a computer. It's supposed to be a world designed for monsters. You know, like it's supposed to be somewhat physical. It's supposed to be like somewhat resembling the physical world. It's not just like this is what inside a computer looks like.
You can't have it, but there's no logic to it.
And as I mentioned before, I like how the layers are kind of like not physically connected. They're just like they're kind of weird vignettes. Although that's my next point, the different settings. So many of them are just desert. Like we have the desert to land in, then there's like Jagamon and Meramon territory, which is just more desert. The Wind Valley is also desert. The Chuchidaramon town, desert. So many desert villages.
Desert.
And it's just like, so much desert.
Desert.
Yeah. And I guess that's not too different from like the amount of time I spent in the desert in season one, but something about it is just weird.
Yeah, it's like it's falling apart or something. Like Data is dying, and we totally do see that.
I like the design of the clock land or whatever it is. And like, it's pretty visually striking, although it's just like, it's like the most weird world that we get. Cause it's just like, there are clocks and there's like a clock that's stuck. And then the only inhabitants are a Clockmon and Hagurumon and I guess Ryo, cause they refer to him as their like protector or something. And it's just like, why, this is not like a ecosystem that makes any sense. Like at least the ghost town, whatever, the like weird, like Picasso town with the castle and stuff, like at least that's like
cubism.
Yeah, like at least that's like trying to be weird, or like this is a weirdly uninhabited town. This is just like, yeah, this is Clockland where there are two Digimon, that's it. Like, oh, and the Megadramon.
Three.
Yeah. So that's weird. My general impression of the digital world after all this is that I like having these different settings and not really being beholden to like having the conceit of them not needing to be physically connected and stuff. But I feel like I feel like Cross Wars did it better in terms of actually having like distinct lands and zones, I think they called it. And whereas here it's just like, they're kind of weird and random and not necessarily random in always a good way, but I guess we'll have to see how we get to more areas. But the main complaint I have with this at this point is just that despite having all these different locations, it just feels really small. You know, like they get split up and there's this like build up of this huge threat of them getting split up and how hard it will be to find them again. And then there are a couple episodes of them like, you know, not running into each other. And then once they do, they just like walk up and like, oh, hi, cool, we're together again, cool. Like when Kazu and Kenta rejoin Takato, Henry and Jerry. They're just like, they walk into each other and like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's probably my biggest problem with the digital world in these episodes, because they could have literally caught up with Kalamon. I mean, when I say they, I mean Rika, Kazu, and Kenta, because yeah. Kalamon is transported to the one place that they were.
Yeah, so it's like Kalamon flies by.
And actually, everyone keeps going to the flag. So clearly, like, even if they get caught by a data stream, they're not sent very far.
Right.
So what's the point?
I feel like it was supposed to be very far, and then it's just, like, they keep getting back to the flag. And then they do eventually, I guess they don't actually run into Kalamon, they run into Majiramon by just, like, walking downstairs and like, oh look, Majiramon, cool. Like, it's just, yeah, there's a disconnect between how much it's built up as being this really vast and harsh landscape, and then, oh, we just walk into people randomly, or we walk past people randomly, like, just feels small.
Yeah, I don't know. I have less of a problem with Ryo, Kazu, and Kenta having found Takato and the others, because it is implied that Ryo knows what he's actually doing, as opposed to them just wandering around.
But I mean, like, you have one group who knows where they're going, and another group who's just wandering around aimlessly. Like, the group who knows where they're going wasn't looking for them or anything. They do just kind of, regardless of the fact that one group knows where they're going, doesn't make it less coincidental that they run into each other.
Yeah, but also, Takato's group got lost because they went into a cube.
I forgot about that. That was, like, a weird oddity of them transporting by just, like, climbing into a cube and the cube moving and then...
No, but they just all went into the cube, like, oh, this... this is probably safe. What if, let's just all go into it and nothing bad will happen and then we're all lost.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, there's Kazu Kenta and some other guy.
It doesn't even make sense, like, why they would climb into it without, like, they climb into it like, oh, wait, we're being transported. Like, why would you climb into it without it thinking it was a transporter? Like, eh.
Do you go into caves thinking they're going to be a transporter?
No, no, I'm saying, why did they climb into it if they didn't, like, they climb into this box for no reason and they're like, oh, wait, it's a transporter. Why did they climb into it in the first place?
I agree. But...
I mean, they were like, it looks weird. It is fun. We want to sit down.
Leomon, join us in our cube of cubiness.
We want to sit down because we've been walking all this time. That sucks.
I guess so.
But they could have easily sat on the floor.
It's dirty.
Yeah, but they were like, they said the cube was smooth. So it's like, it implies it's more comfortable.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so this digital world, I really do like it in terms of being more digital than the like pseudo physical worlds of Adventure and Zero Two.
Yeah, but at least they had names for the areas that had to do with data.
Yeah, that felt kind of like tacked on afterwards though. Like this design has nothing to do with it, but let's just call it file
and server.
I hate this digital world.
And what do you hate about it?
Everything. You can't just be like actually what I hate about it the most is that Digimon that we have presumed have come from it seem to know nothing about it, such as Renamon or Leomon or Terriermon.
Terriermon actually came from that like same area.
Okay, well, I don't know if that's
because I remember thing. It being that it was also desert.
Right, also desert, but there could be lots of desert. And I what I assume is that the world is big enough that they don't know. So the dub does contradict this because Renamon says this has changed since I've been here, which is not the original line. So like, okay, if you accept that line, it's canon, then it is contradictory. But what I just assume, my head canon is that that's a weird line, whatever. And that instead, they have not been to this area of the digital world, and it's vast enough that there are areas that they don't know.
So, but even if you don't know it, what you should know how it generally works, but they're like, there is no logic to this world, so we don't know anything. Like,
is there really so much that they're like really confused with the logic? Like, they're not like, whoa, it turned dark. They're like, yes, it turns dark. This is how this works. They're not like surprised by that part, too.
But that part doesn't matter.
Okay, what is it that matters that they don't know about?
They're just like, I don't know, if you get sucked into a data stream, like, maybe it's, you'll probably be fine, but, like, you'll get lost.
No, they all say, if you get sucked into a data stream, you can end up anywhere. That it is an agent of chaos that can throw them anywhere. There's not, like, a lot, there's not, like, anything they could know about where it sends you.
They just seem woefully unprepared for something that is, like, it is a constant danger.
That is a little thing. Like, how do you live your life there, like, on a day-to-day basis, like, with villages and stuff, with just, like, the possibility that anyone could get sucked up by it? Like, no one seems to be, like, scarred by it, except for, like the kids, it's a constant threat for them. But, like, they go to these villages, and they're not like, oh, yeah, we're dealing with a bike. But also, some of us just get randomly teleported across the world. You know, like, it doesn't seem to affect anything aside from the kids.
Yeah, honestly, it would have been more exciting if, like, wild, dangerous Digimon just like suddenly appeared because of data streams, but it doesn't.
Yeah, like it.
Well, that's not true. I thought at the time that they implied that Meramon appeared from a data stream, but that doesn't make sense because he was clearly like, you know, attacking that territory. Like, it wasn't just appeared out of nowhere.
He did not randomly appear out of nowhere.
I could have sworn he like appears out of a data stream though, which doesn't make sense. Yeah. Ash, do you have any thoughts of the digital world?
Not really. It was cool.
My
it's
only
not something
positive,
I think about that much.
My only positive thought about the digital world was I really liked the shot. I guess it was in either episode. I think it was the beginning of the Babamon and Gigimon episode. It was like a semi-cool panoramic shot that went from like Takato's group to Rika and Kenta and Kazu, I think.
Okay, that was weird. That was a weird shot, to be honest, because that made it look like the digital world was really small.
Oh yeah, like it flies over the digital world. Yeah, I remember that
yeah,
looking really
that's
weird.
That's a shot.
And I'm like, this is out of place, and you're never gonna do this again. But it was sort of cool.
It seems like they tried to put a lot of effort into that. Like, I imagine that was more expensive than a lot of other stuff they do, a lot of other animation.
I don't know. I really dislike this digital world.
more so than the Adventure?
Yeah.
Well, the thing about Adventure, they interact more with, like, the places than Tamers does. Like, Tamers, they're just like, we're here and nothing really happens.
It's just like, even if you don't accept Renamon's thing as canon, like, the thing about the digital world, like, the reason that people don't get sucked up into streams, I guess, is because they all live in houses or something, like, under the ground, which is like, that is so boring. And like... There's nothing exciting about this digital world except, like, stuff flies around and destroys you. Isn't that fun? No, it's not fun. Why? Like, what?
I mean, I agree that the data stream, the fact that the data streams don't seem to interact with the inhabitants at all is contradictory, but, like, I don't think that proves, like, there's nothing redeeming about the world. You know, like...
No, there's nothing redeemable about a world that has, like, no logic to it.
I don't think it has no logic to it. I think like the point of most digital world designs is that it has enough logic that is bizarre enough to us that we're like, this is weird and different.
No, adventure effectively achieves that. This does not.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with Ashley on this. Mm. Like, not enough happens in the digital world, and it's kind of boring.
I don't know if I ever felt like there was logic to the digital world in season one. Like, it was just like random things in random places that didn't feel like there were actually inhabitants. It didn't feel like there was a society that made any sense. And it's like there was like random. Like, there wasn't a conceit for there being random vignette. There wasn't a conceit for them being random different locations that were separate from each other. And yet, that's how everything felt. It was like, now we're in this part of the area, which is like completely separate from this other thing. And like, there are restaurants that make no sense. And like, there's a bar and like things like that. There's like, there's no society that makes any sense to that. At least what we mean here, like, society makes sense and seems like it's something that would fit into the world of the mechanics, except from the cloud area, which was just the society of two Digimon in clock space. But aside from that,
I mean, I like the layout of this digital world more in terms of like representation of digital space. I just really disagree that it has enough logic internally to be a compelling world.
Here is the next commercial, and this one is for, this is for episode 27, so it has some of the same things as the last commercial.
Coming up next on Fox Kids, Calumon is lost in the digital world. Impmon has found an evil Deva. And will Gilmon lose his mind when a phantom motorcycle finds him on an all-new Digimon? Then
Phantom motorcycle
World Chef of the Century contest. Find out on an all-new Mon Coley Nights. Coming up next on Fox Kids, it's a new Digimon, followed by a new Mon Coley Nights.
Mon Coley Nights.
Cartoons on motorcycles.
What? Oh, motorcycle. Right.
I mean, it's just funny that they're playing the motorcycle like as a... I mean, they have to be doing it as sort of a joke.
I don't know.
They seem to be playing it like straight up.
I think they're like, what do we have to work with? Like, let's make this really dramatic. Like I don't know. Like, it's also intriguing enough. You're like, wait, what? Like, what? Why? Like, is Gilmon just going to become like a biker? Like, he's just going to be like a join a gang or something? Like, why is he? I don't know. It's weird.
That's what you get when you get a crappy digital world.
Not a crappy digital world.
It's just really disconnected.
I like the digital world, Jeff.
Thank you, Ash.
He has nothing to say beyond that he likes it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, my topic is how is gender, but through the lens of male overconfidence in everything. Which is a real thing.
Hear, hear.
So I honestly did not think that I could identify with Rika more than I already did. And then I was like, I really might cry. I'm really upset. So my really grating thing, starting with Kazu and Kenta, Rika went to save them. Like, Rika was running with Takato and their group initially away from the data stream, like smart people do. And then they were like, oh no, Kazu and Kenta are like gonna get sucked into the data stream. And everybody else, nobody else does anything, but Rika's like, you know what? I got this. Like, come on, Renamon. We're gonna go get the stupid boys. And they all get sucked up into the data stream. And then Rika's like, God, I hate you. But you know what? I'm gonna help. We're gonna find our friends. Like, it's gonna be great. I'm gonna protect you losers. And like, she berates them like that, but like, she is just so right. And then in the end, it's just like, they end up leaving her. People take shots at her, like, Terrymon at... I forget what Digimon he's talking about, but he's like, that Digimon looks meaner.
Wait, they leave Rika?
Like, Kazu and Kenta... They make no attempt to stop Rika from going anywhere. Like, they set her up to fail. Mm. Like, she chases after them, and then she's like, I'm leaving. And they're like, yeah, whatever. We don't like you anyway.
That's... Good. I don't think so. They want to follow her, and she's like, no, you have to stay. And then they're like, okay, we're going to follow you anyway. Like, I think she is saying her intent...
No, I'm talking about with Ryo.
Oh, okay. That point. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Do they make any attempt to be like, no, Rico, like, for real, we can find our friends. Like, we should just follow Rio. No. Like, no, they don't try to convince her at all. They're just like, fine, whatever, you suck.
Because they have the new protector.
Exactly. Yeah. As soon as they're like, oh, this guy is cooler than Rico.
Yeah. And just like, my one positive thing was that when Takato and Kazu and them meet up, Takato is like, where is Rika? And Kazu's like, I don't know, we made her mad, so she ran off. And then, or like, he's like, I said all these bad things to her. And then he's like, God, why did you make her so mad and make her run away? Like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, thank you, Takato.
Yeah. I think it was actually, wasn't it Jerry that asked? I think Takato might have yelled at them for it, but I think Jerry.
Oh, it might have been Jerry, yes. I was just proud that Takato was like, Kazu, you did this.
Like, yeah, like,
you are a bad person. But then they immediately like kind of don't care. So, God. And just like, there's no thanks for Rika actually being the badass here. But like, Kazu and Kenta have a very strong confidence about them that they are right, even though they're very wrong. Because like, stay at the flag, you guys. Like, I'm gonna leave, but I know where the flag is, and you will be there. And then they follow her, and she's like, are you serious? You could have all sat at the flag with, like, together and waited for me. And he's like, oh, I'm just so mad at these two. Anyway.
I mean, I don't think it was a smart idea to leave them in Israel without any protector, like, without any protection. Like, I think that was it's not really in character for Rika to do that, to be like, you should wait the flag. So it's kind of frustrating because I'm like, yeah, they were in the wrong, but also the whole situation was in the wrong.
I mean, sure. I think it was like a war between her, like, I'm really bored, I'm not actively doing something to change the situation, versus, like, I have to babysit these two dumb people who got me in this situation in the first place.
I mean, the frustrating thing is that their personalities, like, oh, this combination of personalities should be interesting, but they're just like the worst, like, possible combination, because Kazu and Kenta are overconfident without any skills, and Rika is like tons of skills without any boasting. Like, they just like are opposites, and I don't know, they don't mix well.
Yeah, my only funny interactions between them were actually Renamon, because Renamon is like the in between of their personalities, where she's like, I can be reasonable, like, everybody chill out, I'm just gonna grab Kazu and Kenta and like, all right, let's go. Like,
I feel like Renamon has a kind of like, they has less of a consistent personality, and just like, they can make her do whatever they kind of want in the moment, so she can flip between being like quiet and reserved like Rika, or being like the one who interacts with them,
being as standoffish as
right.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
Yeah, so it's nice that she can bridge the gap, but also I'm like, it's not really consistent. It doesn't feel consistent to me.
Sure. But so you have Kazu and Kenta being like, it's going to be all right. Like, we are helping you, Rika, even though they've proven not to be. Like, we're going to get Digimon partners. We just confront every Digimon we meet. We're like, hey, what's up? You want to be my partner? Like, I'm cool. Like, I'm great. And then it's completely exacerbated by Rico's, Rio's. I'm just making up names now, guys. Confining them. By Rio coming. And, like, literally one of the first things he does is mansplain how fighting works or something to Rika. Like, he's like, you know, it's dangerous out here. She's like, yeah, mm-hmm. I know. Oh, my God. Hello, I didn't mm-hmm. ask for your help, you little. Like,
So I wouldn't have thought that this was necessary until recently, but there might be some listeners who don't know the term mansplaining, and
I mean, that's fair.
Right. So, Ashley, do you want to explain it?
Okay, so it is any situation in which a man sort of assumes that, like, a woman just doesn't know what's going on, normally dealing with, like, stereotypically dude things like technology or something, even though you are both proven to be equally competent in it. So, like, dude programmer explaining to lady programmer how something really basic works, and she's like, yeah, I didn't ask for your help, which is exactly what it is with Rico. Why do I keep saying Rico? Combining their names is really bad.
Don't do it. Don't go down that road.
Don't go. It's bad.
You're officially a shipper if you mix up their names.
I know. Exactly. It's gross. I hate everything. I hate this show. Which is exactly what happens with Rio and Rika, because, like, they came in first and second / also first in, like, whatever Digimon tournament they were in. So it's like for Ryo to be like, hey, what's up? Yeah. Hey, little girl. Like, no, you should be careful. Like, it's just like so demeaning. And of course, like, Rika recognizes him immediately, and he's like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember you now. You're that mean girl that I, like, totally destroyed. Ugh. And so, like, I feel like they show that Ryo is very confident, perhaps overly so, explicitly in the Nightmon scene, where they're all sleeping in whatever mansion he's taken to them to. Yes, Devimon's other mansion. And then...
Devimon's summer home.
And, you know, like, Nightmon's walking around. They're like, oh my god, why is this random Digimon saying stuff, walking around halls, being creepy? And Ryo's just like, eh, I mean, it should be fine. Like, he hasn't attacked me yet. So if you just leave him alone, like, he'll leave you alone. And then he just goes back to sleep. And then Henry's like, maybe you need nerves of steel to survive this long in the digital world. I'm like, or, like, he's not doing that. Like, he's just like, I don't know, in my experience, he hasn't attacked me yet, so I guess it's probably fine. Like,
So you, like, I don't feel weird, because I feel like my conclusion was from that, like, that, yeah, he was in the right, and, like, it was actually not a threat. But your conclusion is, like, his choice, his action is not advised. It's, like, a really bad, like, he could still be a threat, and, like, he would just be murdered in his sleep for all we know, right?
I mean, yeah, like, he doesn't know anything. Like, it didn't seem to me like he'd ever tried to talk to Nightmon. It didn't seem like, if it was a thing that it's like, yeah, if you piss him off, he'll attack you, then, like, why didn't he warn the other kids before they went to sleep in case they, like, got up in the middle of the night and started walking around or something? Like,
yeah.
It just didn't seem super logical to me. And so, I don't, just having this, having seen this play out on screen just reminded me of, like, I've heard before that, you know, women, even if they are equally competent as men, tend to think of themselves as less competent, so they have, like, less confidence in their self. And then I read this extremely long, thorough article in The Atlantic from, I think it's, like, 2 years ago, that is, like, yes, like, they've done studies, like, you know, women and men take a science test or whatever, and they'll ask... ask them how confident they are in their science abilities. And, you know, women will repeatedly, like, most of the time, their average, they'll be like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm like 6 in terms of confidence, but dudes are like closer to 8. And then, like, but then they perform just as well. Like, there's no significant difference between male and female scores. So it's just like to see this play out on screen with Kazu and Kenta and Ryo and Rika is just so upsetting, because I don't feel like it's again, it's not trying to be like, I'm pointing out how this all happens and, like, I'm gonna be a satire or I'm gonna, like, try to teach you a lesson about it. It's just like, no, this happened because, like, that's just how it is. And, like, Rika is probably going to be punished for it, especially if she actually becomes romantically involved with Ryo. That doesn't prove anything. Ah!
I feel like what we're supposed to get out of it is, like, to sympathize with Rika, though.
But do you?
You know, that we're not getting out of it, like, oh, Rika's being annoying, and, like, Ryo is cool, and, like, Rika's just being annoying.
No, because I definitely feel like, even for me, it's kind of like, yeah, Rika, you are being annoying. Like, you are being annoying, but, like, you're justified in being annoying, but, like, you're still being annoying.
So, like, there's, like, a frustration with her overreacting to it.
Right, like, he barely does anything. He does technically save them, but, like, even before he talks, she's mad at him. Like, mad at Ryo. I don't know. And I just felt like one of the sentences in this Atlantic article is, like, women feel confident only when they are perfect or practically perfect. Mm. And I feel like that is very much the encapsulation of Rika, especially in the beginning, was she was like, I must be the best tamer. I must be perfect. And then Ryo comes along and is like the epitome of how she isn't perfect, because he beat her in this thing. And, like, we are not given reason to believe that he is better, even though he has a long, complicated backstory, apparently, with Cyberdramon. Like, that is not presented in this anime. So, like, it's just, like, he just seems totally, like, he can't even control his Digimon. He has no, it doesn't talk. It has no place. It's just so infuriating. And then I feel like, specifically with her making fun of Kazu and Kenta constantly, another paragraph from this article was, boys also benefit from the lessons they learn, or more to the point, the lessons they teach one another during recess and after school. From kindergarten on, they roughhouse, tease one another, point out one another's limitations, and call one another morons and slobs. That's exactly Kazu and Kenta. Just saying. In the process, some scientist dude contends, such evaluations lose a lot of their power. Boys thus make one another more resilient. Other psychologists we spoke with believe that this playground mentality encourages them later as men to let other people's tough remarks slide off their backs. Similarly on the sports field, they learn not to relish wins, but also to flick off losses. So I feel like Rika is in a very big catch-22 thing where she's trying to be one of the dudes by like insulting them, but because it comes from a completely different place where she's like, I actually need this to hurt you deeply. Like, I need you to learn a lesson that is like, I am actually wrong, not the lesson that boys teach each other of like, whatever, it doesn't matter if I'm wrong. And it's just like she can never win. She can either be complacent with them and be like, yes, I'll go along with your stupidity, or she could be like overly nice and be whatever, I guess, but that's also probably not going to get her what she wants. And like, insulting them doesn't get her what she wants. And then in the end, even though she does save them, like, they don't stick up for her at all. She's very, I'm just so mad. I'm so mad to see this replicated exactly in Digimon. Ugh, they're 10.
But the fact that they're 10.
12 in the dub.
Their age is what
whatever
makes them have the, like, childish schoolyard things, isn't it?
Sure. It's like, I guess if you wanted to be depressingly hyper-realistic, like, yeah, I guess it's doing that. But, like, that's not, it's not helping the conversation of like, oh yeah, wait, women are actually equally as competent, so maybe we should try to improve their confidence. Instead, it's like just feeding into the negativity of it.
I mean, I don't know, but like, I feel like when you have a role model, like giving kids a role model like Rika, I feel like can help with confidence. You don't think so?
Not when Rika keeps getting torn down, no.
Yeah. Like, when does Rika have like a truly triumphant moment?
I mean, I don't know if she has particularly fewer than the other main characters in this arc.
She does. Yeah, it's like every time she wins something, she has to admit that she's wrong about something else.
Yeah. I don't think the others have to admit that they were wrong about something else.
Henry admits that he was wrong about not getting involved with the motorcycle thing. I'm trying to remember what else happens in the episodes. Like, there isn't really a real conflict in the Gigimon Batman episode. Do any of the main characters have a triumphant moment in these episodes? I don't think so, aside from Rio, who just is there to be a cameo.
I'm not talking about just in these episodes. I'm talking about every time Rika has had a triumph. Yeah. It's been, no, because you were wrong about this and this and this. Like, everyone else has a moment of, yes, I got it.
But don't, like, I'm just saying, like, but anytime anyone learns something, they also learn, and what I was doing before was wrong.
It's not just what you were doing before, it's who you were. Nobody gets the who you were was wrong before.
That's true, yeah.
Except
Rika. Yeah, like, I would say in this article, it definitely directly touches on, like, the way that boys are punished for, or like told that they're wrong, is just like that specific action was wrong. But when girls internalize, like, I did something wrong, it's like their whole entire being is wrong. Which is very much what it feels like with Rika. Because, like, yeah, they do make her out to be hyper annoying. Like, why would you want to be friends with the girl who always thinks that you're stupid and, like, wants to cut you down?
I don't think that the takeaway viewers get is like, oh, Rika's so super annoying in these episodes. Like, I feel like it was actually, I feel like it was more, like, I sympathize with Rika much more than, I was like, oh, the people she's with are being annoying. Like, yeah, Rika, we're on the same page. Like, you and I together are like, oh, these stupid boys.
Sure. No, but that's the first three episodes, I think, are like, yeah, you sympathize with Rika. But then I think once Rio comes into the equation, then it's like, all right, now you're not supposed to sympathize with Rika.
Yeah.
Like, you're supposed to be like, Rika, you're overreacting to this. Like, calm down. And I mean, yeah, I still think the show does a good job of, like, it does show that Kazu is wrong. But, like, I still feel like Rika is the one who gets punished for it. Like, Kazu finds Takato and the others. Like, he's going to get a Digimon. I don't know. That's just how it is.
This third commercial is for episodes 28 and 29, which were the two Rio episodes, right? Yeah, two Rio episodes. Get ready for this. This is interesting.
Next on Fox Kids, it's two music. Digimon adventures.
Awesome!
Lost and separated from one another, the Tamers meet their ultimate match.
It's him!
Will he change their lives forever? When Calamon becomes the digital world's most wanted.
Come out, wherever you are.
Can the Tamers reach him before the Davis do?
Reformat him. We're officially toast.
Find out on two new Digimon starting next, only on Fox Kids.
Oh boy.
I really wish my job was to be like, when Calamon becomes the most wanted Digimon in the digital world. Oh my god.
I was actually, that's that second commercial for episode 29. Like, I guess you couldn't see it, and the listeners won't be able to see it either. But like, watching it, I was like the imagery is so much darker than I remember the episode being. So I was like, wait, is this even is this for a future episode, right? And then, it showed Majiramon, the Dragon David, and I was like, wait, no, he's gone. So this is definitely this episode. Like, but yeah, it's just like they take every little thing and hype it like, oh my god, is anything gonna be the same? Rio exists. Oh my god, my heart is a flutter.
Never again, Jeff.
Being a Digimon tamer is so new to me. I have so many unanswered questions.
What is even the digital world, Hal?
I think we covered it, and like, we solved all the mysteries of the digital world.
I don't think so.
I have a 10-page essay detailing how everything works. 10 pages is not enough to explain this. It's like,
that's not a lot.
I have a question.
Okay.
So like, the old data that's floating around, like, I get that it's remains of other data, but what can they combine and become a new Digimon? Like, is that how Digi eggs get formed, by all this old data just like, you know, doing the nasty randomly?
Are there even Digi eggs in this universe? We haven't seen any, have we?
Right? I mean, no, you have not.
Is there a primary village?
And Digimon don't have sex, so...
I guess that's how it happens. In the scene where Guillaumon is tracking Renamon, and Leomon's like, hey, Guillaumon, do you smell anything anymore? I'm like, hey, Leomon, why can't you smell anything?
He's too high up off the ground. His nose can't get there.
Also, I mean, Guillaumon's supposed to be more of like a tracking...
He's a dinosaur!
He's a dog. Okay, I didn't realize you're so emotional about...
Speaking of dogs, that's mine.
Yeah, speaking of dogs...
So I was like, why does no one quite, like, I understand that, like, Digivolution has, like, the vague age-related metaphor, especially in Japanese, with, like, the child is the name for rookie and adult is the name for champion. But, like, they don't extend that past adult slash champion. And, like, no one questions how Digimon and Babamon are mega. They're just like, oh, yeah, these are just mega Digimon. Cool, these are the first mega Digimon we met in this universe.
What?
Right? Why don't they get those mega Digimon to go fight the Davis? Aren't the Davis only ultimate?
Yes.
And like, Rika shows no fear when she reads, like, yeah, Babamon, right, and mega level, like, yeah, it's fine.
And then she freaks out about Megadramon.
Exactly.
Which is an ultimate.
Well, so it makes sense to be like, okay, these Digimon look totally innocent, and it says mega, but they're innocent, totally fine. But in the episode, there's this whole, like, subplot about, like, are they innocent? Who knows? Are they trying to kill us? Who knows? Like, and they're mega, you would, like... but I also wasn't sure if are we supposed to glean from it that they actually can't fight, and it's just they're old, and that's why they're mega? Like,
see, this is what also confused me about the digital world, is that now it implies, like, before we've talked about, I mean, I guess there have been old Digimon before, but now I'm just, like, really questioning that mechanic of, like, there are levels that you, so can you be, like, a jillion-year-old Koromon? Like, what's up?
I don't know if you can be a jillion-year-old Koromon, but I think you could be a jillion-year-old adult-level Digimon.
But that's just, it's confusing. It doesn't,
Because I think there's levels of self-realization that, like, everyone gets to once they're old enough, and others that people don't.
I'm going to write a story about 100 jillion-year-old Koromon.
Okay.
Do it.
I think I already complained about how Rika keeps on wanting to go home instead of trying to find the others. It's like, no, that's not, no, Rika, stop. No, it's not, you're not making sense.
That's not even Rika anymore.
Okay. This is a huge one, which is, I think we alluded to before, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get to it later. But I think his name is Katurman, the dog deva, which is ironic. He starts with cat, and he's a dog deva. But anyway, he mentioned, like, he's explained Iman about power Digivolve, and he's like, okay, we've lost the ability to Digivolve, alluding to Calamon, without humans, so we need to rely on humans. But if you submit to the Sovereign's will, then you can, like, but, like, so do they have it or do they not? Like, it turns out all you need to do is, like, make a bargain with the Sovereign, which all the Devas have. So the Devas aren't even mega level, but apparently they have the power to Digivolve mega level if they ever need it and never use it. Like, and it's just like...
Is that different in the Japanese? Is there a different...
Oh, I don't know. I didn't...
Explanation?
So I've been reading this blog that has a, like, detailed list of differences. Detailed list of differences between the dub and the sub. And they didn't mention that as being too different from what I recall. So I haven't... Like, I didn't watch in Japanese, but I don't remember it being flagged as being particularly different.
Well, that's silly then.
Yeah. But no, it's also just like... Even the... It can't be the dub writing because the scenario... is inconsistent. Like, they want Calamon because they need the power to Digivolve, right? And yet they are able to Digivolve Iman. Like, you can't write that in. Although I don't think...
Oh, boy.
I'm not sure if the reason they want Calamon is just for the ability to Digivolve. I think there's a bit more to it. What is the... When Beelzemon comes out of his lava pit and is, like, right next to them and just, like, rides away, is he supposed to not have noticed them there? But they're talking. Like, right... They're, like, 5 feet away and they're talking and he, like, turns his head and just drives...
Wait, when?
So, like, when Beelzemon first Digivolves and then, like, jumps out of a lava pit and, like, or I guess I don't know exactly how it is framed, but he, like, gets on the motorcycle. Like, the motorcycle falls away and they're like, okay, guess who with the motorcycle? And then Beelzemon comes out on the motorcycle and he's right there and he was just sent on a mission to kill the people who are right there and he just drives away.
That's true.
And I'm just like...
This is why I was very confused by Beelzemon in all his interactions with anybody he previously knew.
He's like, I just need to be emo for a couple episodes. It's not my time.
Yeah,
yet.
Like...
The writers will not allow it.
I mean, he was hesitant before Digivolving about...
Right, he's so hesitant, so I'm
actually...
like...
Actually...
Yeah, is he like, I'm not ready yet? But... But also, it seemed like... I was like, this is ridiculously convenient that he goes through a lava thing, comes out right where the motorcycle is, like, this is just no. But then I was like, wait, no, this actually makes a lot of, like, Katurman puts him in the lava pit, and, like, it would make sense for Katurman to be like, okay, and here is your target, you are coming out of the lava pit here to go kill them, and... But no, he does. Like, so, like, I'm like, okay, it makes sense if Katurman was like, here's your target. Here, I'm going to, like, transport you to the target. But then he just drives away. So, like, wouldn't Katurman reprimand him for being like, no, you need to go? Whatever. It doesn't make sense. he really should just be like, I need a really dramatic place for us to fight. It needs to look really cool.
Well, I kind of thought he just needed to get used to his new strength and body. But...
That makes sense. Although,
but what better way than to kill people?
What better way to just ride on a motorcycle for a while?
Yeah.
I could see that, him being like, gosh, you're right here. Like, I'm not ready for that. Like, I'm just going away.
Now, a Calamon song break. For some reason, the song has, like, as soon as I heard it, I was like, wait, I remember this song much more than, like, anything else from the show. I don't know how, like, if I listened to it after watching the show. I don't know why. Like, I don't know. And I think I definitely had a phase during season one and beginning of season two of, like, taping using a cassette recorder to tape the music and play it back. But that was way beyond, like, I was too cool for that by the time Tamer aired. So I definitely didn't do that. So I don't know why I remember it so well. Anyway, so here's Calamon's song.
I was having a yucky day, but now, woohoo, I get to play! Other Digimon were so mean, the nastiest you've ever seen! I don't need them, not at all, my brand new friend's a big pink ball! Running here and running there, like a hyper teddy bear! Happy Doodle, oh what fun, I wish I had a chocolate bun! Or a cookie, or a cake, or a minty chocolate shake! Who needs snacks, I have a toy, my pretty Polly, what a joy! I'm so happy, I don't care, I'm still not wearing underwear!
Okay.
The best line was, I'm still not wearing underwear.
Something I only picked up on this listening is that, like, his voice just sounds like, throughout the most of it, he just sounds like he's, like, on the verge of tears, but just, like, trying to sound like he's happy. Like, especially at the end, he's like, I'm so happy!
he's losing it.
He's definitely losing it.
Oh, Calamon.
Is it Stray Bits time? Because I have to say that if Rio calls Rika a wildcat one more time, I might straight up just like destroy him.
What is this, High School Musical?
Oh.
I think he might, and I think it might get worse.
No.
Actually.
How did I totally missed that. Yeah. He calls her a wildcat?
At the very end.
He's like, at the very end of the episode, he turns when he's leaving or whatever. He's like, hey, have you seen that wildcat Rika?
Wildcat.
Like, say hi for me. And I'm like, I hate you. Hate you so much.
So I thought it was pretty cool how the just like the myths that the Digimon have of the real world, like how they have like built up things that like they think that if they kill a Digimon who has been to the real world, they'll be able to go and stuff. Like, I don't know, they're kind of just like logical next things that they might believe. Uh-huh. I guess we briefly alluded to before, but the gayness. Kazu and Kenta, oh my god, in the Digimon Bomb episode. Like, I thought that whole episode was framed. It was framed in a couple stays with this older couple and finds out what their like future life might be like and learns how to avoid it.
Oh my gosh.
And
wow.
Okay, there's the image, which by the time you're listening to it, I'll already post on social media. But the like image of the two of them in the bath singing, and they're like they're blushing because it's like hot, I guess. And they're naked and they have their arms around each other. And I'm like, okay.
Okay. Gosh, guys, they're 10.
12.
They can do whatever they want when they're 10 or 12. Anyway, but the song they sang in English is just like a wacky, stupid song, but in Japanese,
singing in the bath.
My god. So did any of you look, because I posted this in our Slack before, did any of you see the song they actually sing?
I saw it, I don't remember it.
So the song they sing, the title of the song they sing in Japanese is Manly Spray.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's not really a good translation for it. I guess like the word that translates as either spray or spit is shibuki, and the song is about like sailors and like men on a ship just being so manly that they like spit all overboard and stuff, and like, but just like, this is so weird. Not weird, just like, is this supposed to be gay? I don't know. Lots of subtext.
It's pretty gay. It's probably not supposed to be, but it is pretty gay.
I mean, it is gay in the way that most male bonding things are pretty gay, but nobody wants to admit it.
Yeah, I think most male bonding doesn't happen naked in bath, but that's just me.
I mean, sports is
depends on your culture.
Yeah.
Culture.
Yeah. Another thing I thought was a cool logical progression of things that have been said up before was how the Devas take it as like a huge offense that the other Devas have been killed and not uploaded. Like, it totally makes sense. The kids are like, yeah, we're respecting them by not uploading them, and it makes sense how the Devas would be like, you're disrespecting us by not uploading. And yeah, good intentions never work out.
I would like to say, on the front of friendship, I again did appreciate Jerry and Rika's friendship, and I feel that again it ties into gender of like, Rika thinks that insulting boys is somehow making her more boyish when she is in fact not achieving the same end. She does not treat Jerry the same. I just also was disappointed in Digital World that it was not mentioned that Kiyoman was not from it, although reading the episode summaries, it seems like there is some weird episode about his birth, so maybe that is explained, but it feels weird. It is what it contributes to the, like, I didn't get any feeling that, like, Leomon and Renamon and people, like, understood that much about the digital world as opposed to Guillaumon or anything.
Yeah, like it doesn't... I still kind of disagree with you about the understanding part, but it doesn't really... you don't get the sense that, like, Leomon and Renamon are necessarily, like, guiding them through a place they've already been. They do seem more knowledgeable about it at various times, but, like, they don't seem like they're, like...
It doesn't seem advantageous for them, is it, I think.
I suppose.
Like, it seems like Guillaumon is perfectly capable of navigating his way through the digital world.
Okay, can we talk about Impmon's turning point some more?
No.
No?
All right.
No, yes, you can.
I didn't remember that. I had no recollection that he was so hesitant. Like, I imagined the way this went down was that he was like, oh, kill them? Cool, that's what I want to do. I had forgotten that he actually, like, totally admits to having an emotional connection to them and doesn't want to hurt them.
The thing that I didn't buy about it, though, was that when he was shown his previous little children tamers, that he was, like, excited about that. And I was like, no, I think that's not at all what you would have reacted with.
I don't, but that's like the first time he's actually been so close to them that we've seen him. Like, I feel like it shows his true, I feel like the way he, Katurman convinced him, whatever, was like expose his weakness by exposing how much he really did want to be with them and then tear that down. You know, like we've seen him from like observing from afar and being all cool and collected and like, yeah, I don't need them. They're so whatever. But then like,
no, because the last time that we saw it, I feel like he wasn't calm and cool. He like had a flashback where he was like, this was awful, and got like shivers from it, and then Renamon snuck up on him or whatever.
Yeah, I guess there's something also pretty problematic about like, if the last time he thought about like, if he has like shivers, it like kind of harkened, it like almost feels like PTSD from his experience with them, to then be like, oh, and they're back, oh my god, I love them, like that is not the greatest connection, the greatest real life metaphor that it calls on. I like how he was like, at some point, he's like, well, I basically don't have any choice. And we're like, no, you totally do have a choice. You can just reject this. But I feel like that's how people who do crappy things often just feel like they have no choice. And that is realistic. I also just like how, like, the position he's in now, he laid out priorities, which is like, I want power above all else. I also care about these kids a little bit in the Digimon. Like, I care about this a little bit, but like, I really just care about power. And it's him, like, he's facing a decision, like, well, given the priorities laid out, like, what am I willing to do to achieve those? And he actually has to be like, okay, well, I technically said getting power is more important, so I will sacrifice other things for that. And I kind of want to look at his arc in terms of that, in terms of realizing, like, what his priorities are and realizing the cost of his actions. And
I mean, I kind of still got the sense that he might have been duplicitous about it. Like, he's like, yeah, I'll totally kill them if you help me digivolve. But like, if the digivolution thing is the thing that's required to kill them, then he gets what he wants before he has to achieve the thing that he doesn't want to do. So,
oh, so you think he's just like, like, maybe his running away from them is not like, I'm on the mission, I'm just going to wait to do it. It's like, he'd be like, yeah, okay, I got what I wanted. Now I'm just...
Yeah, like I don't really want to do this, so...
Although I feel like he needs a goal. Like, he needs a mission. I feel like he would not be content to just, okay, I'm old, now I'm mega level, now I can just ride around a motorcycle wherever I want to go. Like, I think he needs, like, you don't ever just need power for its own sake. You need power in order to go up against something.
I mean, sure. I'm just saying that I think it's complicated enough that, like, even though it doesn't seem to make sense, I can logic Impmon's feelings normally into something that makes sense.
I really like Henry's offhand comment that, I think it's at the end of the bike episode, the motorcycle episode, that he likes how Takato never listens to him. And I guess that's what he likes about him.
And it was super gay. Oh, sorry. Oh. What? Come on.
That is as valid a reading as others.
I don't, I think I've said this before, but I don't like making everything sexual because I'm just like, can't we just have beautiful friendships, guys? Like, come on.
So I'm not even sexual. I'm thinking as like boy crush kind of thing, like little kitty crush.
I just like,
I was just, I don't normally make everything sexual, I hope, but that like with already thinking about everyone else pairing up, it's like, oh, you guys are left.
You guys are left. But no, I took it as different.
Wait, that's true. There's a world where like everyone is gay. Like the six of them, they all just end up being gay.
But I mean, it just feels so purposely split, like, oh, well, we only have two girls, so we need to make one girl go off with two of the boys, and one of the girls is romantically involved with the other boy, so we should make her go with them, so,
like, I mean, even if you divide them into their logical pairings of, like, the most canonically supported ones of Takato and Jerry and Rika and Ryo, like, it still leaves Kazu, Kenta, and Henry having a three-way.
You're still left with you. Well, that's what you get when you don't write enough female characters.
Kazu, Kenta, and Ryo. Kazu, Kenta, and Henry. Like, I can't even imagine that.
No, never. No.
Okay, so I was looking for this moment because it's like in the beginning of the first episode, watch the first Digital World one where they take the pictures and they're like, oh no, these pictures are pixelated. That's how I learned the word pixelated as a kid. And that is not pixelated. That's not what pixelation is.
They're fuzzy, Kenta. Fuzzy.
Yeah.
I actually recently forgot the word pixelated like a year or two ago in an interview type setting.
We have a cat named Pixel.
And then I was like, I know. And then I was like, wait, my cat is named Pixel. I just don't accept that as a real word anyway.
I just wanted to briefly mention that we are all aware of the fact that Rio has a backstory. I mean, we alluded to it briefly before, but I'm considering whether we should like do it as a like covering his backstory as a standalone special episode. But for now, yeah, we didn't.
Do we have to? Can like a single person do that, Jeffrey?
I don't think a single person podcast would be good. But
didn't Lost in Translation Mon do it already?
I also wanted to mention that Lost in Translation Mon has an episode that you can go listen to if you want to hear the backstory. Yeah. It also just doesn't really, like, Rio just doesn't fit. Like, it just, like, there are things here that seem to contradict what was said in the, like, eventually we'll meet his family and, like, how did his family come from the other universe? And there are ways of wrapping my head around it. But anyway, I mentioned as my favorite thingy, but we didn't really elaborate on it, but, like, Takato's mom, that moment was just, like, super sweet.
I really liked that Jerry was the one to go and have that moment with him.
Hmm.
Not because of their relationship or anything, but because of who Jerry is.
Hmm. I also really like how the Gilmon bread is like, it's one thing for them to make Gilmon bread, but like, okay, I didn't really think about that too much. But then like the fact that they're like making Gilmon bread and like working on it and trying to perfect it while he's gone is like, so it's so cute and sweet. It's like them being like, we're going to use our expertise and work on something that you care about. And I don't know, something about that's just super sweet to me. And like, once you come back, you'll have the perfect Gilmon bread recipe. And oh, Gilmon bread. Anything to say about the new Digimon? I mean, there are a lot of new Digimon in these episodes.
Metal Coromon was the best. Hello.
Yes. Agreed.
Metal Coromon, apparently the Japanese name is, I think it's Choromon. It's apparently not based on Coromon at all. It's like supposed to be resembling a like mouse, like a computer mouse. But I'm like,
I mean,
that's even better. It's so cute.
It's a bomb. Like, it literally has a tail that ticks. I was like, Jerry, you're holding a bomb. What are you doing? And then never blew
up. It's fine. It's cute. It's adorable.
Exactly.
It's her destiny to be the hero of time.
Yeah, it's a bomb chew. Also, it's not just a hero of time. Other links have used bomb chews. Wait, no, is that? No, it's just the N64 games. Anyway, I had absolutely no recollection of Katuramon's name. Katuramon's the dog, Deva, who also doesn't look like a dog. Like, I didn't. Actually, that's not true.
Yeah, I was like, what Deva is this supposed to be? No, it took me until they said, oh, the dog, Deva. And I was like, oh. Okay.
But I think that's because,
yeah,
like, it's not what we think of, like, in the West as a dog, but I think it is a traditional Japanese and Chinese representation of dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, it makes sense.
It's Koma-san Mon.
Wait, what's the name of it?
Yeah, it's a Koma Inu, right?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah, Koma Inu is like a lion dog. That's what I was going to like. I'm like, I feel like it's a mix of dog with something else. And yeah, it is a lion dog.
Except we have a lion dog Digimon already.
Who?
Sisarmon? I don't know. It's in the first Tamers movie.
Mm. Does anyone else think that Sabrigimon kind of looks like Rio as a Digimon?
Yeah.
What?
I mean, because they're both like, Rio's wearing like some weird metal patch on his, like his whole one arm is like metal, so it makes it look like he's Cyberjamon.
And Cyberjamon's kind of just like a dude with like weird feet and arms, but like the color schemes are like
metal over his face as Digimon are wont to do.
Yeah.
Ridiculous dialogue draft, where we each go around and pick our top two funniest, most ridiculous, or most touching lines from the episodes. I don't know. It's a sports draft. We are teams. I don't know.
Okay, so this one is from episode 29, and I think it's when they're walking through the weird little Picasso-ish cubism place. And I guess they're just talking about how it's weird. And I think they may have also just seen the scarecrow things that aren't really Digimon, but they're just... Side note, those are based on... What's it called? I just had it. They're, the thing that they are is Heno Heno Moheji is the... is actually the characters that are on their face. It's like they're all hiragana characters. Anyway, it's how Japanese kids draw scarecrows. Anyway, so Terrymon says,
"You're not in Kansai anymore, you know."
Chad was like, "Oh, that's a really bad 'you're not in Kansas' joke," and also just really awkward because it's like, I think most American listeners don't know Kansai. I'm not even pronouncing it right.
Yeah, I didn't even.
I mean, so I only Kansai.
Kansai.
Kansai. I only know because of the it's I think most famous for its dialect. Yeah. Like, if you listen to Tentomon's voice in Japanese, it's like, which I guess we would have heard and try, right? It's like, he talks in a very different accent. And there's that whole subplot in Cyber Sleuth about Tentomon, like, plagiarizing Digi Wikipedia with Kansai dialect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that the joke.
Right, because it sounds like Kansas. Like, you're like, oh, you meant to say Kansas.
Yeah.
But no, you...
Okay, this is episode 25, and it is possibly a pun.
Possibly.
So, it's between Takato and Henry, and it's when they're all trying to sleep.
Couldn't sleep either?
No way, not a wink. Too wired.
Because they're in a computer.
Okay, mine is at the end of episode 26, which is after Babamon and Gigimon were singing.
Oh, my stars and goddess woman, you have a voice like 1,000 broken bottles raking across a chalkboard!
What about you? You make screaming babies sound good!
I was so mute.
You find that funny? What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have problems, guys.
All right.
I forgot to mention before how much I didn't like their squabbling. Quabbling? What's the word I'm looking for? Quarreling.
Squabbling.
Oh, okay.
Squabbling is a word.
Okay, squabbling. Sure. It felt like what we complained about before about Takato and Takato's parents being like, oh, they're married. Look how much married couples don't get along. And like, it was like that to the extreme. Almost to the point where it was like so extreme that it was just parodying and not actually presenting like that's how married couples actually are. But I was still just like, can't like married people just be like happy?
I mean, it was also just like they would get in fights and then Gigi Ma would be like, I love you so much. It was just like super ridiculous. Whatever. Okay, you guys were not as amused by it as I was. That's fine. Go on, Asher.
It's okay. I'll go on. So this is from episode 28. I forget what was happening. I guess they were fighting somebody.
That's no terrier man is practicing to be a mime.
It'd never work. He'd have to be quiet to be a mime.
Henry's just sass master when he's not at home.
Yeah, no, for real. Like,
Their relationship is very fraught. There are no inhibitions in the digital world. What happens in DigiVegas stays in DigiVegas.
Just go, Jeff.
Okay, so this one is from episode 26. I don't remember when it is at all. I think they're just looking at the desert or something. And Renamon says,
look at how barren it's become.
Yeah, this is kind of how I pictured the inside of Kazu's head.
Yes. That was a good one.
I don't know what to pick. I'll just go episode 26. Rika says to Kazu and Kenta,
go home! You're as useless as hair on a fish!
Yeah, I was considering that one. I guess I'll just go with a semi-cute Guillaumon line from episode 27, when he's trying to help whatever villagers get away from the bike. The little kids that were, like, tickling him or whatever. Says,
hurry up, because that bike is looked first before it crosses the street.
What?
I love you, Guillaumon.
He's cute.
Yeah.
All right. Then my last one is from Kazu, or from episode 26, rather. Actually, and it goes,
no. We've got to ask Gigi Mon and Babamon something.
Like what?
You know, like a question.
Ugh.
Like, you brat.
They're such brats.
Y'all, they're all brats. Should not have gone without their parents.
Or at least Miss Mori. Not Miss Mori. Miss Asagi.
It's just Rika didn't want them to come at all, and she saves them, and then they just don't even try to make her come with them. I'm so mad.
So a couple of things I had in mind for closing statements. What are all of our... Because this is the last time we see Ryo for a while, as I recall.
Good.
Oh, thank God.
He goes off to tame Cyberjamon. So what are our final impressions of this first, and spoiler, not last, but first iteration of Ryo's appearance? Is that it? Just, ugh.
Nah. He is an overconfident mansplainer.
That is actually, yeah, my reaction is completely, ugh.
I said meh.
Meh.
So the thing is, I'm like, yes, he's obnoxious. He's overconfident, all this stuff. He's like supposed to be way too likable in a like just so off-putting now. But so in a way that's so off-putting now. But I'm like, okay, he was a cameo for two episodes. Like he's there and he's gone. Okay, whatever. And if that were it, I'd be like,
look at it this way.
Whatever. However, he got Rika lost.
I'm saying, like, if that were it, if it were just two episodes, I'd be like, okay, this was a unfortunate diversion of the series and whatever. But I don't know how much you remember Ashley, but like, I don't think it's spoiler too much. He becomes the fourth main character. And at that level, it's like, I guess I should also just briefly mention that, like, according to Kanaka's notes, actually, I forget how much of this is detailed in his notes on the site, how much of it is kind of, like, accepted common knowledge, but just that, like, Ryo was not in the initial plan, like, wasn't in Kanaka's vision for the series and was kind of pushed by, I guess, Bandai, or, like, the owners of the franchise to integrate with the video games and to push, because I mean, that's how a lot of anime works, that anime has a much wider reach and can basically serve as a advertisement for the manga or the video games or blah 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 and the other ways that the series can earn money. So it kind of, it makes sense from a franchise perspective to like put in this character that might sell video games and stuff, but yeah, it really, especially with him becoming a future like one of the core main characters, I feel like compromises things. But I guess we'll get to that eventually. Final impressions of the digital world. Let's all vote. So Ash and I are in favor. Ashley and Andrew are against.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Kind of.
I'm against this digital world.
Do you want to destroy it?
Yeah, I mean, if it got destroyed and like...
You're like, okay, cool. That's fine with me. Whatever.
Yeah.
Mm. I think...
If it got destroyed and got replaced with something more reminiscent of the adventure digital world...
I hate the adventure digital world.
Or any other digital world.
Yeah, I think that's a running... I think it'll be interesting once we get to other digital worlds and can compare and be like... Because right now we're just like, okay, we have two. Like, it's not a very interesting comparison, but...
What I remember of Frontier Digital World, I like that digital world. That was fine.
It was more visually interesting. That's what I remember about it.
There were a lot of trains.
There was more variety.
A lot of trains and train tracks.
That automatically makes it the best. Trains automatically make it the best one.
So I think looking at this digital world more abstractly, I like all the concepts. But then like when we get close to it, I'm like, I don't actually enjoy the episodes in it so far too well. So I'm also curious to see how I feel once we finish the season and or get through all the digital world stuff. Because, yeah, the concepts are cool. I feel like the place itself is not won me over. So now, recommendation articulation. We're going to try a little bit different format this time to speed things up, and we're each going to go around in turn and basically give like an elevator pitch for why you should check out a thing that we have been enjoying recently. I am articulating a recommendation for Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key, which is a mobile game, which I had first heard about the web-based browser version from Japan that was just called Kingdom Hearts Key a while ago, and didn't seem like it was interesting, and I don't think ever it was released in the West. So then when I heard when there was a mobile version of it, and it was getting localized, and it came out, I was like, I'm not really interested in this. And then I looked at the artwork for it, and I was like, I'm really not interested in this. This looks silly. But I was in my like heyday of Digimon Lynx craze, and so I was like, mobile games are pretty cool. Let me like try downloading this. And I never opened it. And then a friend, Miles, so he mentioned that he'd been playing it, and I was like, this seems silly. So then I tried opening it, and then now I'm completely addicted to it. It is, it's just...
Oh, I get to blame Miles for it? Yes.
It is, oh my god, it is so, so addicting. It has basically surpassed Digimon Lynx for me. Digimon Lynx in comparison seems barren, like there's very little to do, because Digimon Lynx in comparison is very simple. This is like, there's so many systems, so many things you can do, just so much to it. I feel like, I guess I've been, at the time of this recording, I've been playing it for a little over a week. By the time you listen to this, it'll be like a week, like 2 weeks or something. And who knows if by the time we actually release it, if I'll be as crazy about it as I am now, but it's been really addicting, like more than basically any other game I've ever played before, which is not healthy. It's not a good thing if you have important things to do. And especially if you have two mobile games.
I yelled at him yesterday.
Especially if you have two addicting mobile games you're addicted to. Like, but it's so, I don't know how to describe it. Like, I was so off-put. It's like one of the biggest gaps between how off-put I was by something and how much I enjoy it once I got into it. And I don't know how to explain. It's good. I am failing on the excuse selling people, so I'm just saying it's good. And it's actually in English, so it's easier to play than Digimon Lynx.
I'll go next.
I'll go with you.
Yeah, I think we're probably going to recommend the same thing. So I've been playing...
Also, I'm starting to really not feel good.
Andrew and I are going to recommend Yo-Kai Watch Wibble Wobble, which is also Wibble a cell Wobble. Phone game. It's also a cell phone game. If you have heard of Yo-Kai Watch, it's really fun. If you have not heard of Yo-Kai Watch, it's still really fun. It's adorable. The whole idea is that you go around confronting and befriending these demons.
Which are not Digimon or Pokemon.
They're not Digimon or Pokemon, but they're very cute. These demons who are making people's lives difficult. So, like, there's one that makes people depressed. There's one that makes people talk too much and say embarrassing things. And the idea isn't that you defeat them and make them go away and the bad feelings are gone and you've triumphed. The idea is that you come to terms with that and you make friends with it and you learn how to live with it and also how to sort of use that friendship to confront other problems. And it's really cute. And if you do play it, you should send me your friend codes. wait. My friend code is SIUL4I90. So
we'll have it on the show notes page if you want to find it.
Yeah.
Okay, my turn. And mine is TB52524W.
We won't have that on the show notes page though. There's only space for one. Okay, so is that it?
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. I've mentioned this on the show before, but I have been rewatching Kill la Kill, and it is perhaps more amazing than I, you know, because I'm not all new to it and being like, what's happening? I don't understand.
Why is everyone naked?
Yeah, why is everyone, what's happening? So Kill la Kill is a satire of shonen things, particularly fan service, made by Studio Trigger, with music from Hiroyuki Sawano, who does like Attack on Titan music, and All Noah Zero music. All Noah Zero sucked, but the music was great. It was great. Music was great. So
was
that
it?
Guy is awesome. Yes. And so I really love the main character, Ryuko. I always mess up her name though. I've decided that she is one of my like top three favorite characters after, you know, Katniss Everdeen and Misaki Aizawa from Maid-sama. And like, it gets me really pumped up to play ice hockey. So if you really need to like get pumped up to do something, Kill la Kill. Great stuff. Great female friendships. Really smart. Wonderfully animated. Watch it.
You stole 30 seconds. Actually, 30 seconds. Come on, keep selling it.
No, it doesn't need any more selling than that. I mean, it's really funny. That's the other part.
Also you really like rape jokes in the first episode. That's why you want to...
No. Okay. There are two problematic things. One of them is rape crap and sexual molestation incesty crap. That's bad. Everything else is amazing.
I mean, everything, the whole premise of the show is up for discussion. Like, it's not the kind of thing where, like, this is completely unproblematic whatsoever. There's nothing problematic about this at all. Like, I think the whole concept of the show, there is merit in discussing whether it's problematic or not. You know, like, which I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying,
sure.
I think that it is mostly unproblematic and is good in how it depicts things.
Sure. But I have a male coworker who is sort of a playboy type person who thinks it is utter garbage, and he is wrong. And I think that's because he does not have the appropriate life experiences to understand it at all.
So our final quote from the series of quotes from Willow and Jaden Smith. In the wise words of Willow Smith, I went to school for 1 year. It was the best experience, but the worst experience. The best experience because I was like, oh, now I know why kids are so depressed. But it was the worst experience because I was depressed.
Oh, man.
On that note, you can find the full show notes for this episode by going to podigist.com/307.
There are lots of ways you can send us feedback for next week's follow-up episode. On our show notes page, podigist.com/307, you can let us know any comments you had about this episode, rate the Tamers episodes in this arc, and vote on your favorite RDD clip so we can declare a winner of the draft.
You can leave a voicemail answering our question of the week. How would you convince a Digimon to partner up with you? You can either call 913-CALAMON if you're in the U.S. or send an audio recording to podigious@gmail.com. Keep them under 90 seconds to be included on air.
And don't forget, you can always leave a review for the podcast in iTunes for us to transgarble.
Podigious is made possible with the support from our awesome Patreon, including Amanda Angelmon, Andre LeDucmon, David Graumon, Eric Angemon, Joe Keto, Jack Santa Agamon, Hylunamon, Sam Kruagamon, and Stevie Patamon.
If you want to support the show on Patreon, you can get some cool rewards, like access to our private Slack chat group for $1 a month, monthly stickers for $5 a month, and early episodes for $10 a month. We're really close to our next goal, which will allow us to get new podcast artwork commissioned more frequently. So check out patreon.com/podigious.
You can find Podigious on Twitter, Tumblr, or Facebook to keep up with the Digimons and get funny images and GIFs related to the show. If you don't like how we pronounce GIF, then become a Patrimon so you can vote on how we have to pronounce it. You can find me on Tumblr as Phantom Cella Steph. Ash?
I am also on Tumblr as Asher Dashery.
Okay, you can go. Jeff?
I am definitely Jeff on Twitter.
And Ashley?
I am AshMcD00 on Twitter.
And Pixel?
Meow!
Yeah, we should make Pixel a Twitter.
No, an Instagram. Pets have Instagrams.
Do it.
Do it. It's an Instagram.
Our Calumon artwork is by the awesome Mary Cagle, a.k.a. Cube Watermelon, on Tumblr and Twitter.
Share the podcast with your friends who have difficulty controlling their pets because they fuse with an obsessive time-traveling evil Digimon.
And join us next week to talk all about your feedback. Bye.
Bye.
And remember, never stop Digivolving. Podigious is your critically nostalgic, analytical tour through the Digimon anime. I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by Ashley McDonald.
Whatever. Can you do it again?
you can always rely on I'm in a box. I'm in a box. Ooh,
yeah,
I in a box.
I in a box.
Right, okay.
I in a box of very mad. Calumon gets trapped in a metaphor stuck between two worlds, but then Kitty prides his way out. The kids mourn the loss of a new friend. Guillaumon mourns the loss of an old friend, Bread.
What new friend are the kids mourning the loss of?
Merrimon? They, like, make a grave
for
him?
Yeah. I forgot about him completely.
Calumon runs into Impmon, but doesn't recognize him since he's been going to the lava pit gym lately.
Ash, I think you need to read the sentence before you read it out loud.
Yep, I don't read the sentences before.
Calumon runs into Impmon, but doesn't recognize him since he's been going to the...
What's happening here? You guys gave me all the complicated ones too. Like, why did this happen?
Why do you say you guys? Like, who did the coloring?
I did the coloring.
The peacocks will. That's how peacocks got so gorgeous.
And assholes.
That's not how they got so assholes. Birds are assholes. Period.
Have you ever been cornered by a peacock before?
Yes. I've also been cornered by a swan, which is awful.
Really?
Okay.
Yes.
Are these Florida problems?
No, this wasn't even in Florida. This was in California. It was a swan. The peacocks are a Florida problem, yes.
And to Jeff's point of like, but isn't it good that you have Rika? But like, I feel like since we've all talked about how Rio is supposed to be cool, like the show does try to portray him as cool, I think. Like,
right.
Yeah.
We only think that he's not because we are not 10 anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Like when I was 10, I liked him.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like on that level, like, no, yeah, it's not being constructive to have that play out. There are lots of ways you can find us. What? No.
Lots of ways you can find us. Go to this address. You can call this number. You can go to this park. You can
friend me. Friend me in Wibble Wobble. Okay, we have 4 minutes. Come on. So now we have to say, did you evolve your differences?
I guess so. Okay, bye. Digivolve your differences.
Bye.
Digivolve your differences.
I didn't realize we were supposed to say it all together.
I didn't realize it either.
Digivolve your differences.
Digivolve your differences. All right, bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
In the original, it's evolve your differences.